Despite some low unemployment numbers and tons of job openings, many tech workers are continuing to struggle to find work. In many cases, technology that is supposed to help companies find qualified workers is failing, and job hunters are also facing issues of fake job listings, scams, and ageism. In this episode of Today in Tech, we'll explore why many tech workers are still struggling to find a new job in 2024. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Today in Tech. I'm Keith Shaw. Joining me on the show today is Chewy Senanayake. He is the CEO of the Job Helpers and a human resources expert who has assisted people with more than 50,000 job placements. And you've been on the show before, so welcome back to the show, Chewy.
Thanks for having me again, Keith. I appreciate it.
So just before we get into some of the stories that we're hearing from a lot of workers, do you have a sense of why companies are still doing a lot of layoffs? Because we were told last year that after the first round of layoffs, it was all because of the pandemic and they were restructuring. And it was a bunch of a shift because of all of the demand that had gone away. But they're continuing to happen. And now I'm starting to feel that this is just a part of doing business now. It's just this is what the world is going to be facing. Do you have any sense of what's going on?
Absolutely. So during the pandemic, what happened was mindset shifted, right? So a lot of these companies, especially top executives, what they did was they kind of started to play with AI or artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence is not something new. It's kind of backed by technology, but then nowadays there's more training that the systems have done. Like say, for an instance, a developer, back in the day, they used to, you know, have a lot of developers in their team. Nowadays, all of those scripts, even like some of these coding scripts are done by AI. So there's a lot of shift into that AI realm. And they're trying to kind of cut the cost because they can have the AI do the same amount of work or maybe 10 times more versus someone actually putting in the effort. So we're seeing a shift from the mundane busy work going into like our vacuum cleaner. We used to have a broom like some years ago. Yeah. Now we are using a vacuum cleaner. Same concept here. We're kind of changing the way we work and do things.
So it's not necessarily a shift anymore from the pandemic because they overhired and now they're starting to use the AI tools to restructure within companies.
So a lot of times what has happened is these AI systems have gotten better and better and better. Like say, for an instance, even the big companies like LinkedIn has its own AI, Zoom has its own AI companion. If you look at all these other tech companies, they're using more of those AI systems that are much cheaper to subscribe to a subscription versus having someone put in the 40 hours a week. So it's, I mean, you're kind of battling it out right now there, and there's going to be these shifts and valleys and peaks, as you see, because they're not quite sure which roles are being either being taken over by AI. And then also the next piece of it is like, say, if you take a company like Accenture laid off 20,000 people. When we were having initial discussions with them, they were like, most of our jobs being moved to different countries like India or South America. That is also happening as well as we see.
Okay, so there is still a lot of outsourcing that's going on with
there's a lot of outsourcing. Wow, okay. We call it business. So BPO, business process outsourcing, is the kind of the terminology, right? Uh-huh. So that's also happening. A lot of large companies are doing it. At the same time, a lot of these even medium-sized, larger, even smaller companies now can get resources from overseas because they're trained. We're living in a digital age, so what would you have more than what another person is offering in a different country is the real question, right? So that's also something that is coming into play as well. A lot of workers, they're getting better with their English training. So companies moving to China and all these other countries like Vietnam, those people have caught up to the same process that we have here in the US. At the same time, now they're getting better with the technology, at the same time, the language. So you're kind of facing that competition as well as we go.
Okay. That's not a lot of good news for people that might be looking for work to find out that, you know, that all these jobs are shifting. But I want to get into some of the other technology hurdles that we're hearing about. Are the applicant tracking systems really working, or is it more about helping companies weed through the flood of resumes that they get rather than trying to help connect the right job seeker to the right job? Because it feels like it's more of a benefit for the companies rather than the job seeker. You know, so do you feel that these systems need to be better? Because I've got some stories where a lot of the AI that's being used in some of these new systems are weeding out more qualified people for other ways. I mean, tell me what you think about that.
Great question. And the answer is two part.
Yeah.
Part one is, think of it this way, okay? 10 years ago or 20 years ago, what happened? Well, a lot of people had this, they would know someone within the company, they would get introduced to a recruiter. The recruiter would have a handshake process, submit your application to the hiring department, and then you're through. But nowadays, what happens is it has completely turned upside down or turned on its head, really. Because what's now happening is these systems, about 93.7% of employers are using those systems, those ATS, applicant tracking system software program. What I've seen personally is Workday being the more dominant system. And then there's ADP, iSIMS, PeopleSoft by Oracle. Those systems are in play today. So what has happened is there's not so much of a recruiter right away looking through your content and making a recommendation. Now the AI is doing that recommendation. Is it more accurate? Probably. But do they have the human touch? No. So yeah. That's that second piece, right? So a lot of people, they still, if they think that they have to build their own resume or they're building their own resume, you want to be cautious with these systems, because if you're not using the same specific algorithm, you might not even pass through. Like, here's an example, someone having 40 years of experience or 30 years of experience or even 20 years of experience. Yeah. Say if they were to say you have 20 plus years of experience or 30 plus years of experience or even 40 years of experience, you're going to get aged out. Ageism will come into play. At the same time, the system is looking for a specific criteria. Say they have a minimum requirement saying they need this candidate that they're starting needs to have a minimum of 12 years of experience in the industry or some specific specialty or overall.
Yeah.
If 12 is the number, when you're putting information on your resume, what you want to do is to say 12 plus years instead of saying 15 or 20 or 30. Right. So that way you give the system the right information to pass you through and get you that interview.
Yeah. Like, for example, I want to talk about, the AI system that was written about in this BBC article that I found was in one case, one user who had been screened out submitted the same application, but tweaked their birth date to make themselves younger. And with that change, they were able to land an interview. So that's an example of kind of some inadvertent ageism that's going on. And then at another company, an AI resume screener had been trained on resumes of employees already at the firm, which then gave people extra marks if they listed baseball or basketball as hobbies that were linked to more successful staff, which were often men. And those that mentioned softball, which were typically women, were downgraded. So, like, even these little subtle things about just listing hobbies, which you wouldn't think would be put on a resume, but things like that are causing, a lot of these resumes to get shuffled out. I feel like the these systems need to be tweaked more. Would you agree with that more needs to be done, or is it more just that a lot of these companies need to kind of go through what the AI is spitting out or rejecting and then looking at those again? Like, wouldn't that help if they had the extra human in the loop?
Good question. So they do have a human in the loop. That's the key component at the end, not at the beginning, right?
Right. So, wouldn't it help if there was one at the beginning too?
Not so much to their like because the systems itself is also evolving. They're getting better and better over the years. We have seen this. Being an HR specialist for the past 10 years, I've learned myself that these systems, like, say for an instance, when and we'll come to that BBC article as well, because that's a specific detail that we want to cover, because BBC is more UK based.
Right.
In the US, we do things a little bit differently. Like, say, for instance, because of the age biases, we're not supposed to talk about age. That's kind of illegal in the country. So that's something that I would definitely not list out on a resume, but in your application, when you're filling it out, you're adding that information or some of that information or work history or something that would resonate that. So yes, that's definitely something that I would address. Like, say, for an instance, if someone had over 20 years of experience, naturally, they're adding all these years of experience. When I'm looking through a resume, I'm seeing sometimes 1987, 1970, some information coming 40 plus years ago, right? So that information is an easy telltale for a recruiter who is coming off on that back end where the system has passed you through, but then now the recruiter is rejecting you because you are, because of ageism. So a lot of times what happens is there's someone actually, so as I mentioned, 93.7% of employers using ATS systems today, 75% of those applications are getting a rejection of some sort saying, thanks for applying, but we've decided to go with someone else at this time, but we'll consider you, we'll put your name in a hat, essentially, or in a list that yeah. you never come back to. And then the average time, I mean, anyone can Google this, average time a recruiter spends on a resume is about 7 seconds, 7 to 10 seconds. The reason why is because they're skimming through to see if the system did their work. And then initially, the system, it has all this information. There are 9 components that they're looking for. Keywords, phrases, topics, lingo, verbiage, competencies, years of experience, achievements, and education. Mm-hmm. So those are the 9 elements an ATS system is essentially looking for. So the foundational system uses that information. So even if they're using Workday or ADP or any of these other systems, those systems are naturally looking for that information on a resume. So that's why it's so important for you to have that information on the resume based off of what they're looking for.
All right. I want to jump to another frustration that a lot of people are having. This is from a lot of anecdotes that we've been receiving, but also some personal experience as well. Sure. This is around the idea of fake job postings, where either fake job postings, recruiting scams, or other busy work that doesn't seem to help the job seeker at all. For example, on the fake job posting, a company will put up a listing on LinkedIn or some other job site, and they'll gather a bunch of resumes, but then they don't do anything with them. They might interview a few people, but they've generally already hired for the position, either internally or had no intention to hire anyone at all. Are you seeing that as well? Are you seeing more and more of that? When you talk to clients, that they can just get a sense that these companies are doing this. Sometimes it might be just because of regulations that they have to post something up, but you know. Like, that just doesn't seem fair for someone who's trying to find a job. Like, if there's a job listing, there should be an assumption that there will be a job at some point for someone.
So this came up in my KPFD radio show with Steve Joy.
Yep.
Where this one individual has even gone to the extent of offering, or the question was, should I give my social security number right away or at the end? I'm like, okay, this has gone way too far.
Well, doesn't that that falls into the scam part, right? Not necessarily the fake job listing.
Yeah, so there's scams and then there's fake job listings. And the fake job listings could be scams as well.
Right. But let's talk about the potential that it isn't a scam, but it might just be companies that feel like that maybe they're under regulation to put a listing up when they've got no intention of either hiring it, or they can claim that they didn't find the right person in the list of resumes that they got, so they just don't hire that person. Or sometimes a budget then changes and you have to like take the listing down. But it does feel like that's happening more often than it did in the past.
It is. The reason why is because they do have the technology to do so, and they do change their mind. Like previously, you didn't see these job applications posted online because they were not sure. Nowadays, now you can post it with a click of a button, and then they can advertise it no problem, like in a place like Indeed or LinkedIn or somewhere. What I would start to do is I would do a little bit of due diligence as a job seeker, because you do have LinkedIn as your CRM system or the people searching engine. You could see if they have an opening or if they have filled that position, if they have someone within that company, because anyone can go into like a Microsoft or Oracle or even the job helpers. You can go anywhere you like on LinkedIn and look up the company name and look at who is working for that company and then see if they have a job like a listing or someone actually working in that department to kind of do that, a little bit of that due diligence homework upfront. And also you want to see when that posting is, like say, if you copy and paste the job posting to Google, you'll be able to see all the listings that that a specific listing has or the company has listed. And you can see, okay, where have they posted it? Like say, for an instance, LinkedIn is expensive. It's about $100, I think, for a day versus Indeed is a little bit cheaper, or ZipRecruiter. So there's some systems that they use to kind of lower the cost, so you can have that advantage as well. So a system like LinkedIn or job board like LinkedIn would be expensive to do so. So they would post it on different channels like ZipRecruiter or Indeed, which is a little bit more less expensive. So I would kind of take that as more of a an action item to take that one step ahead and say, okay, where is this listing posted on a job board? And is that a credible source? And then also do your due diligence homework to figure out who these people are within that organization and how long that posting has been out there. If the posting has been out there for over 30 days, it's a good chance that they're within the realm of interviewing someone. So it might not be a fake listing, but you might not get selected. So a lot of people complain also that I've seen. Here's another trending point. A lot of people, like before the pandemic, a lot of more people used to get job interviews. Nowadays, they don't. So now they have kind of focused more on, oh, this is a fake job posting, versus understanding what they need to do in order to get through the system, because that might not be a fake job posting. It might be an actual job posting.
Yeah.
They have posted it maybe 25 days ago. That means they're in between interviews. And then there's 500 to 1,000 people who have applied. So how can you get that chance to interview, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, there's a balance between that as well.
Is there a time frame that the job seekers can kind of go by as a standard rule for if the job listing appears to be older than a week, older than a month? Like what time frame should a job seeker look at to know that it's potentially a real job versus just a waste of time if it's
job posting is reposted, they're most likely looking for someone.
Okay.
Because they're not going to continue that cycle and continue to pay. Even if they have a criteria, there isn't, unless you're on an H-1B. If you're hiring someone from overseas or someone who has a F-1B or like a F-1 visa, and then they're converting them into a H-1B, which is kind of a work visa, in that scenario, they have to advertise because they have to show Homeland Security that you have posted the job, you couldn't find someone. But there's no criteria like that for everyone else.
Right, but okay, so if a listing has been up for 2 weeks, is that too late?
Sometimes.
Yep.
Depends on how many people have applied for the job. Depends on how,
So there's no hard and fast rule then.
Correct.
But if it gets to 30 days, the chances are not great that job's still going to be open.
Yeah, they might be already in the second or third round of the interviews. They might have not found the right person because they're kind of really going back and forth.
Yeah.
But they'll keep it open for about 30 to 40 days or so. And if the job is opened and then there's a lot of people applying, that means it's a high in demand type of job. Like say, for an instance, a Meta project manager. I've seen this a lot of times. Really high in demand type of job that kind of gets posted within the day or next day, you have 500 candidates or 250 candidates there. So 2 weeks out, would you have a chance at that job? More likely, yes, because of the ATS system, because what it does is it's still screening people in.
Yeah.
Even though you are the 950th candidate, you still can get a good shot at it.
Well, is that a problem then? The we've made the job applicant system, you know, we've digitized everything about submitting a resume, and now every job posting gets 500 responses versus the old days where you would mail a resume or go to the company and fill out an application. Wow, that's really dating me. But, you know, and then you would only get maybe then, you know, 50 to 100 versus 500 to 1,000. Like, so maybe that's part of the problem, is that we've got all of these electronic systems now that have these systems in it.
I mean, it has made your life a little bit easier, wouldn't you agree?
My life as a job seeker or as a company looking for people?
Yeah, you can click on a button and apply for a job nowadays versus sending a mail out. Yes.
But the problem is that I have to now change my resume each time to suit that job, and it becomes like a full time job just trying to apply for a job with the keyword changes and all that kind of stuff.
That's a great point that you're bringing in. Yeah. I would not recommend you to customize the role keywords for every job either.
Oh, okay. So that advice is bad advice then from what I was getting. This was probably 10 years ago.
Correct. It's not so up to date. The reason why is because think of it this way, okay? You go into a job posting thinking, okay, I'm going to be a good fit. I'm going to pull the keywords. I'm going to place all this information into my resume. And then you apply. You go to the job number two and do the same thing. 10 jobs later, your resume is so lengthy to the point where you've added so much information versus removing so much, because you feel like going from one job to another, you feel like everything is important because it's coming up.
Right.
But someone like us or someone like me, a trained professional, what we would do is we would look for a bigger pool of data points by looking at all the jobs that are posted within the past 14 days or so, based off of title, based off of location, based off of salary expectations and industries. And then now we can narrow it down to say, okay, let's go and filter out all the keywords that are getting repeated. Those are the keywords that we're going to use on the resume instead of using every keyword that comes up.
Right. I didn't just add to a resume depending on the number of jobs. I would just create a new resume. I would just copy the other one, repeat it, look at the keywords. But then the problem I had was I had 30 different resumes.
Exactly.
And sitting in my Google Drive. All right, I want to get back to the recruiting scams for a couple seconds. How can job seekers know whether the email that they're getting from a recruiter or a contact, how can they tell, you know, are there some steps they can take to know that it's not a scam or it is a scam? Are these harder to detect than they used to be? Like, what are some advice you could give to before they get down that rabbit hole of a recruiter?
You bet. Great question. So say Kelly Services or Robert Half. I've heard stories where some people, like some of these scammers, would use their logos and then send out a message, right? But it might not come from kellyservices.com or roberthalf.com. It might come from a Gmail account. That's your first telltale sign. And also, you want to look them up on LinkedIn and to see if they are a valid source, a credibility factor that you're building. So how many people, connections do they have? That would give you a better sense of, okay, if this person is an actual recruiter, how many years of experience do they have in recruiting? Do they have their profile content completed? Are they tied into the actual company, like Robert Half? Do you have that name listing? Those are things that you can do. And then also what you could do is you can search the exact job posting and then look for that job posting on Google just to see if you can find that job posting somewhere else, to see, kind of validate that information for sure. If the job posting is not listed somewhere, that means it could definitely be a scam, because most of the time, even though the company might not advertise it, it's going through a recruiter. Say if it's happening like hush hush behind the scenes, no one knows about this because they're trying to replace the CEO, and a recruiter comes in and says, okay, we'll go ahead and find people and hire them. But a company like Robert Half or some of these agencies, they would have their own portal that would advertise those jobs as well. So you can easily go into Robert Half or Kelly Services or somewhere there and then see if that job posting is active on their portal, because if not, you can ask the recruiter questions.
All right. So it's almost like a similar analogy would be if someone's knocking on your door and they say they're from the FBI or if they're from the police or whatever, but you ask them for ID, right? Like it's the equivalent of that digitally. So if I get a random message on LinkedIn that says, hey, I'm a recruiter, we're looking for this job, the first thing I should do is verify that they are who they say they are, right?
Exactly. And you can do your own due diligence. You don't have to ask them. You can go on their LinkedIn profile, connect with them, see if you have mutual connections and things like that. If you don't see any of that information, say, hey, I don't send out my resume for the for positions right now at the very moment, but here's my LinkedIn profile that has more up-to-date information, so you could share that instead because it's social.
Are there other red flags that job seekers should look at if they think that they're being scammed? I mean, obviously, if they ask for the social security number, that should be a red flag, right? Or personal data? Like what types of things do the scammers looking for?
So what we have seen is some of these companies, what they do is, they do a resume review and then come back and say, okay, you're missing some of these keywords. We have a position opening. And what you could do is you can type up the company name on Google and then you'll see LinkedIn articles coming up of those scammers where they're saying, okay, pay a certain fee to get your resume reviewed before you apply for the job so we can make sure that the keywords are added. So it's like more of a one-time fee or some. That'll be a complete waste of your time because they might not even have a position and it might not even go anywhere. You might even not get the resume review that they promised.
Yeah.
So that might be a scam. So those scams are listed on LinkedIn. I've seen them. A lot of people complaining or this has happened to other people. So if you just type in the company name and then type in scam on Google, there's a lot of articles on LinkedIn that'll come up that I've seen. That's one way of doing it. The other way I've seen it is now these people are getting your contact details and all of that information, put it into a list of targeted data, like a Zoom info, and again, what they're doing is collecting your information, phone number, email address. So they need to have a combination of details. Without that, you wouldn't be a profile on their system.
Right.
So you want to make sure that the email, personal email, provide that, not the company. If you have a company email, I would kind of refrain from doing that because you don't want to share company details anyways if you're looking for a job. And then phone number, I mean, if you have like more of a Wi-Fi based, like a Google phone or something like that, offer them that so it just doesn't get so many phone calls or unwanted phone calls on your personal line.
Right.
So have that secondary email address and have a secondary phone number is my personal recommendation for a job search.
From what you're hearing from companies out there, is the process for hiring taking longer than it did before? For whatever reasons, but I also want to add, you know, whether some of the diversity, equity, and inclusion rules that a lot of companies are following now, if that tends to drag out the process more than it did in the past, because it feels like that the process of finding a job is, well, not just finding, but even for companies trying to find someone is longer than it used to take.
Good question. So things haven't taken longer, to be completely honest, because when we help someone, that's what we see about a 90-day. Typically, going through a recruiter takes about 90 days. And what happens is nowadays, it takes about 90 days. That's the average time. The reason why a lot of people are taking longer is because they're applying for jobs and not getting interviews. If they're getting interviews, that process is faster. The reason why they're kind of held up on the front end where they're not getting interviews. So the process is, of course, going to be longer if you're not getting interviews.
Yeah.
So it's really on your end versus theirs. And it's unfortunate because you want to start using some of these technologies yourself. And it's not so much of, I'm going to write my resume tonight and then submit it. It's just not that easy anymore where it gotten so much more complexity to it because it's all digitized. You have to have a digital based resume to present. And that's the other piece, right? I mean, so if you're not getting interviews, the duration is longer.
Yeah.
But if you start to get interviews, the process moves the same way.
Okay. All right.
Within 2 weeks or 3 weeks, you should have. However, for larger companies, there's more interview processes involved, like 2, 3, 4, 5 interviews.
Are you seeing that companies are doing more in the interview process too, where it used to be just one, maybe two interviews, but now you've got 3 or 4. Another anecdote I heard was that someone was interviewing a fifth time at the company for the same position. And that just seems like overkill. Like if you can't decide after one or two interviews what you're going to do with this person, that seems weird that you would have 5 interviews.
So think of it this way, okay? Before the pandemic or even like say 10, 15 years ago, how it used to work was you get either flown in. I mean, this happened to me when I was interviewing for Apple. They paid for my flight tickets, everything, and they kind of took me to their Apple One campus.
Wow, that's a little bit of a humble brag, Chewy.
They took me there, and I was super happy. They showed me around, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
And then I met a few different type of team members and different departments, and at the same time. So you felt like it was like one interview, but then multiple people involved in it. Nowadays, what has happened is they don't want to put too many people on a video sure. call or recorded interview or
right.
like a Zoom or a Google Meet or Microsoft Teams Meet. So what they're doing is they're having maybe 2 to 3 people show up at first, or maybe one person interview you. And then initially you're talking to the recruiter for 30 minutes. That's the process, right?
Yeah.
Then the recruiter passes you through to the actual hiring manager. The hiring manager interviews you then. And then maybe their direct reports might be coming in. So that's the third interview now. And then the CEO or C-suite, someone there might come to it. That's the fourth interview now. So, and then you're meeting with 4 or 5 people at once at the end, so they can kind of have this tiebreaker situation. So that would be the fifth interview. And they're all happening on a remote level,
yeah.
Virtually, so they can do that without a cost. So that's why it has increased, the number of interviews has increased, because they want to include everyone in, so they know or feel like they're making the best decision for themselves.
Well, yeah, okay. So it does feel like it feels to me that it's being dragged out, because again, you're not doing all of those interviews in one day, you're now doing it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks potentially. All right, I want to get some. I've got some anecdotes from some viewers. You know, we asked viewers and readers to send in some of their stories, and I've got 4 of them here. I want to read through some of them, and then see if there's some advice that you could give to them. Let's just start out. So I have a friend who had a good career as a graphic artist, but then she spent some time off when she had her kids. After the kids were old enough where she could go back into the workforce, she switched careers, opened her own fitness business, but then had to shut it down because of COVID, because people weren't going to fitness studios. She did eventually get a job as a remote customer service rep for a software company. And she was a big user of their software when she was managing her business, but then was recently laid off from this position. So now she's facing a resume gap with the time that she took off when she was raising her kids. But now she's over the age of 50, and so has some other issues of potential ageism. So how could she address the resume gap? Is that as a big of a deal as it might have been in previous years? Or do most hiring managers understand if someone is going to take time off to raise kids, that shouldn't be a strike against them?
Unfortunately, it is a strike against them in the world we live in. However, you can minimize the damage by showing them what they need to show first. So what we call it resume front loading, which means that we have the professional experience on the second page and have different sections on the top page where like a summary, a really strong summary talking about personal growth attainment, years of experience based on what the employers are looking for, team accomplishments based off of if they have managed teams or been within a team, and then organizational impact type of details. That high level, you're talking about large company details, like to get some credibility, like Fortune 500, 1,000, 50 type of companies. You're bringing all the older experiences into play by creating different sections like that. The summary section needs to be three bullet points. And then the areas of expertise section is a place for you to add keywords, mm-hmm. at the same time talk about processes, technologies, methodologies. So even those older experiences can come into play. And then another section that we add is called career highlights. Career highlights would be 3 to 4 major accomplishments out of your career, which would be a focal point on the first part of the resume or first page. So that way you can bring older experiences into play without showing that gap, or without showing them that, okay, this happened this many years ago. Instead, you can discuss the achievement itself with the company name, and they can go back and look at it. Now, what we have done is on the first page, they get to see relevance. And on the second page, they still see relevance under professional experience, but then that work gap is not coming up until they scroll down to that second page.
Right.
That's not the first thing they get to see. So they have They have already seen relevance. They're checking most of the boxes, so that age gap wouldn't come up a lot of times, or that would be like a more of a, oh, it's nothing really, or they're not thinking about it right away. So how you structure this resume is so important, because you don't just need to talk about professional experience itself. How you market yourself is so important, because if you were to talk about the work gap right away, and if you go on LinkedIn, this same thing happens. There's an about section on LinkedIn. So where you can add some of those specific relevant skills. So then they get to the professional experience section underneath, and that's kind of so far down, so they can easily kind of pivot their mindset, the hiring manager's mindset, into, okay, this person is relevant versus, okay, oh, I have a work gap.
Okay. I want to get to another one. A 48-year-old male reader gave us this story. He was working as a supervisor in a warehouse for 20 years, and then he was laid off due to restructuring. He decided that he was going to go back as part of a job retraining grant. He went into the IT space. He started with a programming track, but then was told he would be more marketable if he got a networking degree. He finished the 2-year degree in 3 semesters, but he says that he was basically told to fake it until he makes it, that they were teaching about 10% of the content, and that 90% you would have to kind of learn on your own. So he felt that he had a networking degree with no hands-on experience with switchers or servers. Then went to a bunch of boot camps and certifications for CompTIA Plus, CompTIA Network Plus, and did the Google IT certification. He then did get a job in an IT support position, but the company that he was working for didn't have kind of an onboarding plan or a training plan. He was clashing with his supervisor a lot, and was eventually let go. So the question he's convinced that he's going to keep going after more and more certifications and skills and training issues, but he feels like he's stuck in a loop because he doesn't really feel like that companies care about the skills as much as they might. Look, for I want to read a quote. There exists in general terms an unreasonable expectation among companies to be able to hire IT professionals that are out of the box ready to perform. I've seen countless ads for help wanted with multiple bullet points of qualifications for wages minimally better than I was making in my supervisor position in a warehouse. There's no mentorship. I think this is why contract work through temp agencies is popular. So is that something that you're also seeing out there? Is there too much of a reliance with IT positions for a lot of the skill sets rather than some of the other experience that people are having on their resumes?
So great question. So what this person needs to do is they want to think about their transferable skill set, because you're not going to get solely hired by having a bunch of IT skills on paper. Because if you're competing with 500 other people, just imagine how many people have Java and all these other things. They might even have more experience, right? If this person doesn't. So what they want to do is, however, they've been involved in, like they said, more of a, what was the previous job? Was it like a, working within a warehouse?
Yeah, right? A supervisor within a warehouse.
Exactly. So there's a lot of transferable skills that person can bring, like cross-functional team collaboration, matrix team environments, working with certain type of internal external stakeholders, working with outsourced entities, working on business transformation, working on measuring certain timelines, outcomes, deliverables, goals. Things that they can bring from your older experiences that would help them to show that you do have the transferable skill set. Because experience is experience. You could have gained it 20 years ago or 10 years ago and in another position, but you're still going in and working with people. So how different is this versus something else? You have the technical acumen. Yes, great. But then also match it up with soft skills, especially those skills that you've learned, like communication, active communication, problem solving, all those things needs to come into play, so that way you become that full package on paper.
All right, and I got one more story that I want to bring up. I have a colleague, a former colleague of mine, who works in the video and media production space. He's been out of work for about a year, and he keeps Other people keep getting hired below him that are younger, you know, that are younger, and he doesn't, you know, doesn't have enough experience. But he want, there was a point in his story that I want to bring up. Over my 30 plus years, I've been part of many changes in media technology. I grew up in the analog world and was directly in the middle of the shift to digital. Now with a camera on every cell phone and TikTok being the new medium, everyone thinks or wants to work in my industry. I remember the days when you needed a strong technical and writing producing background. Now with AI, you can just ask ChatGPT to go help or go watch a YouTube video on how to do something. It has changed the perception of what companies are looking for and drastically simplified an industry that was built on creativity and innovation. So what kind of advice do you have for people that may have been brought up on a certain skill set with technology skills, but now they seem to have changed? You can't just say to them, oh, well, go learn these new skills, go learn these new things, because most of the time you're just trying to look for work and don't have a lot of time to kind of retrain yourself, especially if you've got all those skills that are technical. This can apply to media production, but this can also apply to, you know, programming and IT. You know, in addition, is there a big issue with HR hiring managers that might not understand the technical requirements of a certain skill? I guess that's a two-part question, Chewy. Sorry about that.
No worries. Yeah, so that's a great question, actually. So two the great answer questions. Is also, yeah, two great questions. Yeah. There's going to be two great answers, right. Two-part answers coming in, okay? So one of the things that this person brought up was the fact that, okay, I have this creative aspect of it, but I'm not getting picked. Right? Because you're trying to compete with ChatGPT, or you're saying, okay, creative, I don't have the skills, or I can't compete. You cannot compete with a computer because they're learning faster. They're more accurate a lot of times, but you have to think about that soft skills approach. That's the answer there. Because if you were to kind of resonate, like say for an instance, okay, if someone came to me, do I want to just bombard them with information that we have been doing this, we know the system, all these keywords and all that, I would to some extent, but at the same time, I would also tell them, hey, here are the customer success testimonials or the customer success stories. So there's that fine balance again, right? So you want to make sure that you're having that same balance where, okay, you know Adobe, you know all these media production tools. That's great. Keep learning. Do the same YouTube work that you're doing. Put in the hours, 10,000, however many hours you're putting in. But at the same time, learn other angles as well. Like say, for an instance, ChatGPT is not a end-all game either. It's working as more of an assistant. So start using it as more of an assistant versus using or giving it the power that you're giving it, because it shouldn't, because it could make mistakes. You need to be part of it. Just like you said, there needs to be that gatekeeper. Just even in the hiring process, there's a recruiter looking at some of these applications, right, that are getting passed just to see the accuracy of it.
Okay.
So that's where you can come in.
How does someone put creativity on their resumes if they know that this resume is going to be scanned by a computer? A computer can't detect how creative someone is, right? So it feels like that the you know, your resume is going to be a bunch of skills to match those keywords to get past that computer. Is it more of a thing that then that you can only tell someone how creative you are once you've gotten the interview? Because that doesn't seem fair too, especially if you're a creative professional. You want to show how creative and innovative and unique you are in that initial resume, but it feels like those days are gone, that you have to just kind of get past that first hurdle of the system and then maybe tell a recruiter or hiring manager, okay, now that you're meeting me, you know I have the skills, here's why I'm awesome. But that means getting an interview, right?
Yeah, so a great question and great thought process there. So let me ask you this, okay? Yeah. Everyone, including creative, have goals, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, you have goals. I have goals. Everyone in creative has goals.
Well, my goal is to get a job, Chewy.
Well, true, but then you have weekly one-on-ones with your supervisor. You have certain timelines or thresholds that you have to meet. You have to get certain viewership and other things, like certain projects.
Okay, yeah, all right.
So all of those things could be read by a computer today. That's when I said those nine things: keywords, phrases, topics, lingo, verbiage, competencies, years of experience, and the eighth one is accomplishments. So the, how the computer reads accomplishments is through qualitative, quantitative details. Qualitative, quantitative details are not so much sales numbers or anything, your goals, your timelines, your right. deliverables,
right.
your processes, your projects.
Right. And so that's certain. that's still effective where you can tell someone these are the goals that I accomplished in my position here. You know, I increased page views by 1,000% or, you know, subscribers went up, et cetera, depending on whatever job you're looking for. But if you could, even if you don't have the hard numbers, you can still, you know, show success, right? Basically is the answer.
Essentially, you can make up your own numbers, to be completely honest, because if, like, say for instance,
no. It sounds like you're sounding that sounds like you're asking people to lie.
Well, no. If you're lying, then you'll get caught, right?
Right. So don't lie.
So don't lie. That's not what I'm saying. Okay. I'm saying make up your own numbers in a way. If you're managing your own goals, you create your own numbers and present it to your supervisor. So even when you go into an interview, you're saying the same thing that's on paper, and then they can double check with that supervisor with those goals and okay. numbers and things that you come up with. You don't have to come up with, like, say for an instance, a Microsoft is a big place, right? So Microsoft sales goals for the year, I wouldn't add that on my resume, would I? I would add my own personal sales goals.
Right.
Right. Because right. Microsoft is a bigger company and I might be indirectly tied into it, but I have my own goals.
Right.
I create my own setup where, okay, I'm going to say, okay, my supervisor might say, okay, you have to make 100 dials a week. And I'm going to go back to them and say, okay, I can only make 80 dials a week. Okay. That's a number I made up that I'm saying, okay, I'm hitting 100% threshold because this was the expectation that was set with my supervisor.
Yeah.
And they can validate that. So if you have that validation process created, you can create your own kind of dialogue or goals or establish that, because the new company is never going to go and say, oh, can you verify all this information that they've added on the resume? It's not a criteria. They'll right. say, when did they work?
Right.
That's a question that they'll ask.
Right.
And then they'll ask a couple more questions, but not so much to the point where they're going through your entire resume.
Okay.
However, you don't want to lie. Let me get that clear.
Right.
You want to be accurate, but you can make up percentage numbers and things like that. That's what I'm getting at. That's the bigger point.
All right.
Say, if it's qualitatively discussed, like say 50%, you want to discuss what that percentage is from the major goal.
Okay.
That's what I'm getting at.
Okay. I want to get back to that other, there was a two-part question there, and the second part was about HR hiring managers and they might not understand a lot of the technical skills and what that actually means. Are you seeing that a lot, or has that gotten better where most HR people do know what a position needs?
HR people probably don't know what they're looking for, honestly, but they do have a job description in front of them because that was sent by the IT department.
Right.
The individual hiring manager has forwarded the job description. So they're reading through the job description and checking some boxes. So they might not know exactly what they're hiring for,
right.
but they're just checking boxes. They're more of a kind of a, think of it as more of the system. Would it know exactly how creative you are?
Yeah.
It might not, but it's doing its job based off of the criteria that was given to them.
Okay. One final thing I want to ask you is that a lot of these applicant tracking systems where they kind of spit out an email. If you're rejected, they'll just say, all right, thank you. What was the line that you used? Like, thank you for your resume.
Thanks.
We're looking in a different direction or something like that. I think.
Yeah, thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be helpful if one of those responses or if you could go back as a job seeker and then ask someone, hey, why was I rejected? Or what things, you know, what caused this rejection that, you know, where I could get some feedback on maybe improving my resume, things like that. Or is that more of like you have to go to another human or a service or things like that to figure it out? It'd be great, like if it was like, oh, well, you got rejected because you didn't have, you know, Photoshop skills, or something like that. Or, you know, I don't know how specific they get, but that's more of a problem with the explainability, right? In AI or some of these applicant tracking systems, they don't spit out a score for these people, do they? Do the res, you know, on the resumes?
So the hiring, the HR person should be able to see it. The recruiter might be able to see it as well, the scoring.
And it doesn't hurt to ask the company on it. You might not get a response, but it wouldn't hurt to then send an email. Although sometimes it's one of those automated emails that you can't respond to.
Yeah. And also you can ask them, hey, I appreciate you looking through my resume. I would like to write you a recommendation on LinkedIn. You can offer them to get something back. In return, can you please give me a detailed explanation? Yeah. What I did was when I was working at the Microsoft campus, I've applied at that point 867 jobs out of 80 some days, because at Microsoft, you can only apply to 10 jobs a day. I was getting rejected left and right. This was like 14, 15 years ago.
Right.
And I talked to a recruiter. Finally, I got a hold of a recruiter because they wouldn't tell me anything. They would just like say thanks, but no thanks. So after getting so many rejections, I talked to a recruiter. I kind of looked up my own Microsoft Teams that back in it was Skype for Business. I looked them up and said, okay, can I go and buy you lunch and you show me what you're doing on your end?
Right.
And you can absolutely ask them to kind of get on a call or at least give you some feedback. So that way they are spending a little bit more time. What you could say is you can come back with maybe three or four things that you saw on the job posting and then comment on saying, okay, you are looking for this experience. I have this in here. I just wanted to understand how I can do better. So come back with a better response saying, okay, I do have some of this information listed. What can I do to improve to be a better fit?
Right.
I understand where you're at. I understand there's a lot of applicants or applications coming through, but at the same time, I want to personally improve because I felt like this would be a great position. And I feel like I felt like I was a good fit.
Right.
I just wanted to understand your process.
Did that work?
Yeah.
It did.
It works.
So make friends with a hiring manager is basically what you're saying.
Well, HR people, yeah. Recruiters.
HR people are people too. All right. So I wanted to ask about you brought up what you basically did was that you started networking with people, because it does feel like the best way to get a job and avoid a lot of this resume stuff is
not
to.
So much.
Well, okay, so I'm just going to use my example. So the last two times that I was seriously looking for a job, I did the whole resume thing. I did the whole, I got a few interviews that didn't get hired. The job that I got was basically because I knew the guy who hired me was someone I had worked with before. Similar case, you know, so that's happened now the last couple of times. I've used my internal network and my LinkedIn contacts and all that stuff to find it. It was easier to find a job that way than maybe going through this, you know, rinse and repeat cycle. Are there some other advice on how people can either build their network or grow their network? Is it just that you have to go onto LinkedIn all the time and just comment on everything and build your network that way? Or is it just, that's what life is. It's all about networking with other people.
Oh,
there's a lot to unpack there, Chiwei. I apologize.
No, that's okay. So, you want to think about say if you're a service provider or a company yourself, okay, you cannot just go and network around and go look for clients that way. You have to have the marketing bit. So in this process, you do want to have really strong LinkedIn content that is optimized so recruiters find you easily.
Yeah.
So you get visibility for your profile. At the same time, you want to have a resume that is passing through the system. That's, again, marketing, because you're sending some direct message out. Just imagine if you were to send a direct message, they open it, they take action, they come to your website, buy a service. Same process here, if you kind of relate to that. And then also the networking aspect is important for you to close. Like say, for instance, you can send a message and get them on a call because you do want to get them kind of talking, learn their body language. It doesn't have to be a video call. It could be a phone call.
Yeah.
And another aspect would be groups. You can introduce yourself to groups. Like say, for instance, you can search on Google. Again, I use Google way too many times today, but it's the best place for you to go because it has the most search results, in my personal opinion. So if you go and type in best LinkedIn groups for recruiters, best LinkedIn groups for HR people, best LinkedIn groups for all these other other like specialty. You can find these groups, make yourself in, join those groups, make an introduction and talk about things that would be kind of things that would kind of carry you away, carry you along the way of the process of an interview, because they might see your profile, they might click on the your LinkedIn profile and get to it and then have that discussion.
All right. All right, Chewy, we're out of time again. Thanks for joining us on the show here, giving us some great advice for some job seekers out there. I want to end on a high note. So there is hope out there, right, for job seekers?
Oh, yeah. All right. Oh, yeah. Someone like us, we would guarantee 4 interviews out of every 10 jobs.
All right, there's your plug. There's your plug for the job helpers. Thank you very much. All right, thanks again, Chewy.
You bet. Take care.
That's all the time we have for today's episode. Don't forget to like the video, subscribe to the channel, add any comments you have below. Join us every week for new episodes of Today in Tech. I'm Keith Shaw. Thanks for watching.